Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, this is the Macko and Cause podcast, another morning edition, 7:36. I'm not doing the time check thing again. I'm Matt Cause, that's Bob Mackowitz. How you doing, Bob?
I'm great. This is my favorite kind of meeting. Remember when I used to take a lot of meetings, and I always loved the breakfast meeting. Lunch is fine. Dinner is too long. The breakfast meeting, everyone, because you got so much to do for the rest of your day, nobody does a breakfast meeting for more than an hour. So you're in, you're out, bada beep, bada boop. I love it.
It's true. It's and I think everyone's energy is at a good spot. Sometimes that lunch meeting, you're going to start to get that point of the day where you're getting a little sleepy. And, you know, the dinner meeting or, you know, the after work meeting, you're like, you just want to get home.
Plus, the breakfast meeting's not about eating. At lunch, you know, you're hungry. You want to have a meal. At dinner, you're there to eat. And it's hard to eat in front of other people and impress them. This has been my experience because I'm a swine. So breakfast is great because you can just have a coffee and a little bit of toast and not have to apologize for the rib sauce on your white shirt.
Okay, well, let's stay on the apology thing. When you're all at a breakfast meeting and someone's got the plate of pastries, no one wants to be the first person grabbing that Danish, but everyone wants that Danish.
Yeah, that's a good point. The Danish etiquette. It depends how many people and how many Danishes there are. See, if you do the head count and there's a Danish for everybody, then you can go for it. But if there's four people and three Danishes, you kind of got to wait for someone else to make the right move, unless you're making the ultimate power move, which is the lion. You know, the lionesses do the hunting, but the lion eats first.
Don't be the drunkest guy at the wedding. Just be the second drunkest.
You have a good time and no one tells stories about you?
There you go.
Why do I feel like you know that from experience?
I've been on both ends.
I have seen it. I have seen it all. All right, so let's talk Leafs, buddy. 3-1 feels like they have a commanding lead. You know what's my big takeaway from last night? After the first period, it was a very easy game to watch. The game three had a lot of stress, particularly in the third period. And game two was fun because it turned into an orgy of scoring. And I guess this one did too. But this one to me just felt like, I got this. Easy. Like Matthew McConaughey. All right.
It was easy as Sunday morning, Bob. Just Toronto. Mm. Toronto was in control. They were in control. They were smart. They were calm. They were all those adjectives you've probably already read 100 times this morning. That's who the Leafs were. And it, it feels like it's over. I think my first takeaway from the game, and this is maybe not the biggest point, but when Joe Thornton scores a goal, he scares me. Because that reaction is that's a scary reaction.
He reminds me of a guy like in a heavy metal band who's in his 40s and he hasn't stopped being metal yet. He still has all the 20-year-old guy poses. But with the 40-year-old guy beard?
The 40-year-old that still has, like, leather, you know, leather is prominently featured in his wardrobe and his accoutrement. Yeah, he's that guy, or he's in the Devil's Rejects. Like, he's in a Rob Zombie horror movie.
That's such a great way to put it. It was a game that didn't really ask for superlatives. I saw some people, or negatives for that matter. I saw some people trying to rip Mitch Marner on Twitter. Yeah, it just felt very looking for something to complain about. And then on the superlative end of things, like Galchenyuk had a great night, but we know he's not a great player, so there's only so effusive you can be. You know, Matthews was efficient. The defense was efficient. It was just a team that looked like a better team.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Jack Campbell gets a 32 save shutout, but you never marveled. It wasn't like, oh my God. Like, there were some moments where you're like, okay, good save. Good moment there from Jack, but there was no, oh wow moments, which is nothing against him. It's a testament to the defense.
You know, if we were going to give a superlative, I think it would be to Nylander, who opened the scoring again. and that's four in a row this series, or four games this series, four games in a row. You know, it wasn't like a performance for the ages. It wasn't a Luka Doncic, and we'll get into him later. But it just felt like a guy who had raised his game for the playoffs. And we talked about the need for consistency. Don't give me two games on, two games off. He's been a dream. He's been he's not the best player they have, but I think you can make the case he's the reason why they're up 3-1.
You can absolutely say he is the biggest reason. Now, you can argue you could argue Matthews, you can argue Campbell, but Nylander's in that conversation. I just want to go back for a quick second about Galchenyuk. I thought he was the best player on the ice. That no-look drop pass to Nylander, like, good for Nylander for scoring, but the work was done by Kerfoot and Nylander. And then the rush pass to Jason Spezza, they made it 2-0 from Galchenyuk. I thought he was the best player last night. And also, shout out to Alex Kerfoot, 3 assists, and they had him at second line center with no Tavares or Foligno.
If I remember correctly, we talked when Tavares went down about how Foligno was going to move over to the second center spot, but Kerfoot was going to go there, and I made the real case that he wasn't good enough. And I'm wrong, actually, and it's really nice to, or at least I've been wrong in this series. It's been really great to see him raise his game. Sometimes when you rip a player, it feels like you don't like that player, and it becomes oddly personal. And I guess that makes sense, because when you say you don't like somebody's game, it's kind of like you're criticizing them. I actually love Alex Kerfoot as a player, like the character of his story and all those things. I'm not convinced that he's been as good for the Leafs to this point as we would have liked, given what we gave up to get him, and the failure of Tyson Barrie. You know, there was always a lot of pressure on him to be somehow the answer to something, and he never was. But in this series, he feels like the answer to something. So I'm happy to be wrong, and I hope it continues.
And at least on this day, Dubas can say, hey, where's Kadri? Oh, he's suspended. So at least, he can walk around and say the deal doesn't look as horrible today as it did a week ago.
One-sided deal, Matty. One-sided deal. Totally tilted the Leafs' favor.
Damn right.
Anything else from the game? I think... You know, I watched the Leafs last night, and it was the first game where you could really feel they were just much better than Montreal. And it's not a knock against Montreal. They're a team that's in transition. They played really well for two games, not so well for the second one. But last night, they just looked like a team that wasn't as good as the Leafs. And so it's no knock against them. But that it felt like last night was the natural order.
Yeah. You know, and Carey Price early on did his best, stops the Spezza breakaway, stops a really good opportunity by Marner. And none of the three goals allowed, would you say, oh, Carey Price was bad there. But eventually the Leafs just kept chipping away. And once Spezza scored to make it 2-0, it felt like, okay, this is over.
I will say that some of the decisions that Keith has made and has to make, I think they're going to give us more grief when the teams get better. It's fun to say, oh, Wayne Simmonds is out there to start the game, and oh, he's going to rough guys up and show that we mean business. And that's fine when you're playing a team that's worse than you. But when the teams become equal or maybe even a little better, those kinds of symbolic victories may not play. And I think we'll learn a lot more about the team. Like, what we're learning about the team now is that they're better than a mediocre team. Now we're going to have to learn how all these tactics and tricks play out. You know, maybe it's going to be the Jets. Maybe not because of their defense. I don't know. We'll have to see. But certainly if they get past the Jets, then we'll really find out how good this team is. And this isn't a criticism. This is just a let's enjoy it. At some point, we're going to have to buckle in and watch them play a team that can punch back.
Yeah, Montreal doesn't have a lot of offensive punch back.
No.
And, you know, Gallagher hasn't done much, Tatar, Suzuki. I mean, you go up and down. But one last little thing. Hey, I mean, good on them. They lost Tavares and they've won 3 straight. They really haven't had Foligno. Hyman hasn't scored. And here they are about to end Montreal.
You know, your point's a good one about how, one, it's character for sure, because they got over the John Tavares, just a shocker to start the series. But, you know, Foligno hasn't been great. Riley Nash has offered nothing. Zach Hyman's clearly playing his way back in. There's a version of this Leafs team that's maybe better in the second round because some of these guys are more back into the swing of things. We'll see.
We haven't even got into the biggest hockey story.
Please.
Gretzky going to TNT.
Is that a done deal?
New York Post is reporting, and it's Andrew Marchand, and he's pretty good. Like, he rarely gets these wrong, that Gretzky was being wooed by ESPN, but TNT was able to land him on a $3 million a year deal. Charles Barkley was part of the group that was able to woo him over. So he could be one of the lead analysts for TNT, a man who's never said anything in his life that you can remember.
Right. I was going to say, like, to analyze something, don't you have to have a thought about it that you're willing to share?
Yeah. But I look at this as a great opportunity for Wayne, because everyone, well, I shouldn't say every, but I would say 70-80% of people are like, that's a dumb hire. That's not going to work. Like, I feel there's a very high percentage of people that have the exact same opinion.
I remember when I used to be producing sports television, like the interview side of things. And if you would have said to me, hey, would you like to have the greatest baseball player in history as an interview topic? I would say, yeah, are you kidding? I'd love that. Same with football, basketball. If you would have said to me, hey, do you want to do a one-on-one with Wayne Gretzky? I would have been like, sort of.
Yeah, you'd know? Get the ratings for the first 30 seconds, but what about after that?
If people are honest with themselves, I don't think they'd watch that whole interview. He doesn't say anything.
Yeah. So this is his opportunity. I want him, first day, rip Edmonton management. Demand Connor McDavid get traded. Passive-aggressive shots at Alexander Ovechkin. Sniff at Leon Draisaitl getting 110 points. He's like, oh, yeah, I remember I got 110 at the midway point in 1985. You know, just, I want him. Just, he's got an opportunity here to prove us all wrong.
True, he won't. But it's, you make a good point, which is it's worth it if it's TNT, because he's literally the only hockey player anyone's heard of. When we were alive and he was playing, you'd go to other countries or meet people from other countries and they would say, oh, Wayne Gretzky. You know, it was like back in the day, it was Gretzky and Loverboy, and that's all Canada was known for. You know, we got Drake now, you know, we got the Arcade Fire. Like, you know, there's so many Canadian stars, you can't even remember them all. But back in the day, there just wasn't much. And so, for a whole generation of Americans, presumably the hockey viewing audience, that's hockey to them. So it's smart, I guess, from name brand recognition. For Canadians, we're like, yeah, but what is he going to say? And to them, it's sort of like, yeah, whose name's on the Chiron?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And TNT, they don't care what the Canadians think. It's just about them trying to get over more casual sports fans, get them over to hockey. So that makes sense. The only thing is, if TNT wants him to be Barkley, they haven't done their research. Barkley's Barkley because he's unafraid to speak his mind. He gets in trouble. He doesn't care. He doesn't care what people think. You know, like, there's a reason why Barkley's and he's got charisma, and I'm sure behind the scenes, Wayne's got, it could be a regular raconteur and has a lot of thoughts. Just, we have no evidence of it on camera.
Okay. There is one way that he can be amazing based on the guy that we believe him to be, or we've seen for all these years. He's never going to criticize anybody. He's not going to take shots at the game, but he's one of the smartest hockey minds who ever lived. So if he can break down plays and show me something that I wouldn't have seen, now maybe for a Canadian and American audience, the threshold for that changes. But if he can show the American audience what's happening in a way that's clear and simple, given who he is, he could be a star in that world. But that's the skill he has to develop. He has to develop the here's what happened here skill.
Here's my only problem with why I worry that won't happen. He couldn't do that to the players on the Coyotes when he coached them. You know, he didn't last that long. So I don't know about his ability to communicate how to do things right in hockey. Couldn't really do it with the Coyotes. Now let's see if he can do it with the TV audience.
You know, we'll see. And it's possible that, you know, so much goes into being a head coach. Maybe it's not his skills as a communicator. Maybe it's, who knows? Who knows? I mean, that's coaching and broadcasting. I see your analogy, but I think they're different things. If he can, like, he's got to become the king of the circle wipe. He's got to be the king of the hold it right there. Do you see how this guy's out of position? Where he should be is he should be there. There's nothing more valuable to the American broadcaster right now than making hockey seem followable. Like, I think it's pretty clearly fast and physical, but Americans have a hard time following the intricacies of the play. And on, if we're honest with ourselves as Canadians, we grew up with it. But if you try and take that out of it, hockey is fucking hard to watch on TV, man. It's like you can't see the puck. They're whizzing around from one spot to another. You know, it's kind of like when we watch soccer. Like, I'll watch with people who understand, and they'll be like, what the hell is he doing there? And I'll be like, running?
He's standing. I don't know what he's doing over there. You know what, Bob? You know what Wayne needs to be? Mm. Wayne can't be Charles Barkley, but can he be Kenny Smith?
That's it, right? Like, that's the guy they need. They need him to be friendly. They need him to be credible. And they need him to hold my hand because I don't understand this game, but I know he's good. I know he's good. So if he tells me what happened, now I'm smart.
Or he goes the other way. He defends Tom Wilson, and he rates every fight on the scale of 1 to 5 Semenkos. It's like, did you see him crack his jaw? I give that 4.2 out of 5 Semenkos.
Oh, my God. That's actually, save that for the show. That's a good one. That's a good one. You know, I mentioned, do you mind if I segue us?
Of course. We're done with Wayne. I just wanted to bring it up.
Okay. I was thinking about really smart players this morning. And I was thinking about how in every sport, the upper echelon is not defined by athletic talent. It's defined by athletic talent and brains. The common denominator between all the great players in any sport is they think and see the game at a higher level. They have all the physical attributes, you know, but the difference between an elite player and a truly great one is brains. Kobe, genius. Michael, genius. Magic, genius. Bird, genius. LeBron, genius. And I'm wondering if we're about to watch Luka enter that territory. Not this series, but if this is the beginning of us saying Luka is a basketball genius, because what he did to the Clippers was magisterial.
And a lot of that was on with Kawhi Leonard guarding him, certainly more last night than they did in game one. And what I'm going to say, this wasn't genius. This was the physical side. There was one point, I think it was late in the third or probably early in the fourth, and Kawhi's guarding him one-on-one, and he does this fadeaway jumper, but it's the rainbow fade, so it's got like that really high arc, and it still went in, and you're just like, well, no one can stop that. It was fun to watch.
He's on the verge. If he could take this team past LA and the Mavs can go on a little run, it's not quite LeBron in 2007 making the final with Zydrunas Ilgauskas and Eric Snow, but it will be the most impressive thing since then. Because he does, like, the Mavs don't really have anybody good. I wish I could love them, but I can't stand Kristaps Porzingis. But, you know, when he had 20 last night. I think he had 20 last night. You know, Hardaway. Like, who do the Mavs have other than Luka? And he seems to be enough.
You're right. Porzingis has been such a disappointment, whether it's injuries or he can't fit in or his ego's upset because he thought he was going to be the main guy and he isn't. Hardaway had 20 plus. I think Porzingis had 20 last night. You know, they'll have guys that'll have a good game. What they don't have is consistency. They don't have that second guy that you know can go and get you buckets when you need them. They don't have that second guy.
And yet, here they are. They win two on the road against LA. The Clips, who, by the way, arguably wanted this matchup because they tanked the last two games of the series to make sure that they could get it. You know, or maybe they didn't, but it sure looks that way. Well, they go. If they got it, got it. Yes, yes, sir.
They lost to OKC and Houston to end the year. Yeah, the Clippers were throwing games.
Well, is this karma then?
Yes, absolutely. It's karma. It's glorious, glorious karma. And Kawhi Leonard had played 41 minutes in both playoff games. Only once during the regular season did he even hit 40. Last night, Kawhi and Paul had like 69 points and 18 rebounds, and the team was still, you know, spent most of the game trailing by 6, by 8, by 10, by 6. Like the Clippers, they're in trouble.
So I still think they're going to win. We saw the Raptors go down to the Bucks 2-0 and then rally 4 in a row.
Yep.
It's not easy to do, but I just think the Clips are a much better, I don't know if they're a much better team, but I think Kawhi and Paul George should be good enough to do it if anybody else shows up on the Clippers. I think they're going to win. Maybe it goes 7. But if the Mavs do pull this off, and that means that the Clippers have won basically bupkis since the whole Kawhi fiasco, and they've given away basically all of their future for this team, then outside of the Raptors championship season, this will be one of my favorite basketball years ever.
Yeah, love it. It's take that, Lawrence Frank, sitting front row at every Raptors game. Oh, yeah, we're going to feel great if this ends up being like this.
I can't tell you how happy I am. In fact, I'm so happy I almost don't want to watch game 3 because, as you like to say, Maddie, leave me my sports happy. I wish I could freeze this moment in time. All of the editorials being written about the Clippers in free fall yet again. The experiment has failed. Paul George sucks. It's not true, but you know, that's just what people say. But more importantly, the plan failed. The plan, Matt, the plan that screwed the Raptors. If this turns out to be true, I'm still putting the championship number 1, but this might be my second favorite year ever.
Oh, that's a good question. Just like your favorite non-Raptor like championships. Like I would go with Dallas beating the big 3 in Miami. That's right at the, you know, the near the top of my list. But yeah, Bob,
that's actually good. So we're good.
No, I was just going to say revel in this moment.
I'm just loving it. Favorite non-Raptors championships. I loved LeBron over Golden State with everybody hurt. That was pretty amazing to watch. I'm trying to think here. They've all been non-Leafs championships. I haven't really cared about an NHL champion in a really long time. I can't remember the last time I felt really good about the team that won the NHL championship.
When they won as like an 8 seed, that was Kopitar and Jonathan Quick, like that team, you know, I enjoyed that one.
I think I would have liked it if Vancouver would have beaten Boston because I hate Boston. I don't really love Vancouver either. And they were kind of the Snidely Whiplashes of the hockey world, but I would have been happy for Luongo and the Sedins enough that would have mattered, but it didn't happen. And then Tim Thomas won. So that really sucked. Washington, when Ovi finally got one.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
We all got behind that.
But it all pales in comparison to if Luka and the Mavs somehow pull this off. Speaking about LeBron, poor Chris Paul.
I know. Oh, just the worst. Another injury and just the bad luck that Chris Paul has had. And you saw it last night, you know, 20 minutes of something. Like he couldn't play that much. He took like 5 shots. And, you know, game 2, it wasn't just LeBron. I mean, Anthony Davis was the best player, but Andre Drummond gave them like a double-double, I think, in the first half. Just the Lakers front court overwhelmed.
Yeah, this is, I didn't know how much longer the DeAndre Ayton bubble was going to last before it burst. You know, he was able to combat some of their size, but it wasn't enough.
He was efficient. Like, listen, he's looked good, but there's nothing else there.
That's the thing is, like, could he stem the tide? You know, he had something like 17 rebounds in the first game, and, you know, he looked really, really dominant, and they didn't. Like, their size didn't come through, but in the end, that was going to be their advantage, and it is. So, you know, Chris Paul, I love Chris Paul as a player, and, you know, what he pulled off with Phoenix this year, lifting that team to where they are, is one of the great regular seasons we've had in a long time. Not just in terms of excellence, but kind of consequence. And this sucks. Like, the basketball gods, man, they got a funny sense of humor.
Yeah, except no one, well, except for in L.A. are laughing. It just, and the moment you knew, it was like a one-point game, and then Anthony Davis blocks Ayton, LeBron hits a jumper, Davis gets a three-pointer, then Cameron Payne, the guy who played well, but now the guy that has to replace Chris Paul, turns the ball over, and there's 2 minutes to go. Lakers are up by like six or seven, and you're like, all right, that's it, game over. And Davis and LeBron just exerted themselves. They acted like stars. They did what stars do.
You know, the L.A. double combos, the Paul George, Kawhi, and the AD and LeBron, after the first game, if that was all there was to the playoffs, you would go, I don't know if two guys can win in the playoffs. If you have a team of okay players and then two superstars, I don't know if that's enough. But the Lakers showed last night, if you have the right two guys and they're pretty healthy, yeah, you can do a lot with two guys.
Well, yeah, because the key there is LeBron, much more than George or Kawhi, can make everyone around him better. And Anthony Davis is the most physically gifted of those four. So you get the most physically gifted, and you get the guy who can involve everyone around him more. And they're gonna do it. Like, I feel like the Lakers are a win or two away from everyone going, oh yeah, those guys.
You make a great point. When you think about the Mount Rushmore of champions, those guys, like the really sort of alpha winners, it's not just that they can get their own. They're always great at getting other people theirs too. You know, when I think about like Carmelo Anthony or James Harden, like these guys are almost uniquely talented offensive players. But nobody would ever say, I think they're going to win four titles and make everyone around them better.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, that's just not the way it works. But the really, the alpha winners, you know, the 3, 4, and 5 championship guys, like, is that true of Kobe, though? Is he the exception?
Yeah, I like Kobe. It's funny. And he, like, Kobe had great basketball IQ, but he also could get fooled into going full hero ball. Like, when he won his last championship, he shot like 6 of 24. Like, he did not have those numbers might be off a little bit, but he was incredibly inefficient. You know, and there's a lot of times he didn't make guys around him better. And it's no shot to say you're not as good as LeBron. Everyone except for one player is not as good as LeBron.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, I mean, I'm pulling for the Lakers in this because I want LeBron to be remembered as the greatest of all time. And
really?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I had the privilege of watching Jordan in his prime, and he was the greatest of all time. But I think there's just something different and exciting about LeBron. And if he can win one or two more with the teams that he had, I think it's pretty much a slam dunk that he's the best.
It's hard for me now just with, like, LeBron, and he's gone full drama queen recently. And, like, lying on the floor for, like, 80 seconds because Draymond Green fouled him and, you know, hit his eye. And you could see it, like, the other day where he wanted to be the one with the bad injury. But it's like, dude, there's guys worse than you. And listen, to me, LeBron's the second greatest. It's incredible the whole career. there's just a lot of stomping and whining going on. I'm like, okay, LeBron, you're physically more gifted than anyone else. Stop acting like you've been shot.
I agree. I don't love it. But then I try to remember that the guy that we love the most, Jordan, punched Steve Kerr in practice. Like, yes. It's not like he didn't have his foibles. You know what I mean? It's just they were behind the scenes.
Well, that's it. It was behind the scenes. And we're just in an era now where everyone, it's not just a LeBron thing. We're just in an era where everyone complains to the ref on every play. And it's not that there wasn't bitching and moaning in the 90s, just not as much of it as now. And you can go back and watch those games and you go, oh, you know, there isn't as much the glaring, the arms out, the I didn't do it that we see today.
Well, the stakes are, it's easier to get the call, so it's more tempting to go and get it. The other side of it is Jordan never didn't get the call. Like, why? Yeah. How could Jordan complain over something that didn't happen?
Good point.
You know, LeBron has the problem, too, and it's the Shaq problem, which is when you look bigger, it's the Gronk problem. When you're bigger and faster than everybody else, it looks like fouls shouldn't bug you. And sometimes I think he's right to complain because we've seen, and this was true of Mario too. When you're bigger and stronger than everybody else out there, it's like the rules don't apply for you. It's not that you have this incredible physical advantage. It's almost like, oh, it's too much of an advantage. We got to even it out by letting guys get away with little bits of bullshit around you.
It's the officials from this, feeling sorry for the other players on the court or the ice where they're doing the full, you know, stop it, stop it. He's already dead as Homer is beating the shit out of the Hamburglar.
You know, if they called LeBron the way they called, you know, a lot of other players, he'd be even more dominant. And I think he's trying to make sure that they remember that.
I think everyone does. Like, I don't get the narrative of LeBron's not getting his respect. I think everyone acknowledges, much like I said, hey, it's no shame for if you're not as good as LeBron. I also think it's no shame to say, hey, LeBron is second to Michael, and there's a conversation to be had that he's number one. Like, to me, it comes down to whenever someone goes, oh, this guy's gotten a fair raw deal from the media, did they, or was it just Skip Bayless?
No, I think we live in an age where people take shots at everybody, no matter what you do. And so, you know, he's not different than anybody else in that regard. Plus, he's the most visible member of the basketball community. And he puts himself out there. And if you put yourself out there, you're open to criticism. That's just the way it is. I'm thinking more just in terms of the basketball treatment he gets on the court. And it just goes back to that idea again that he's so big and so strong that if they called the game for him the way they do for everybody else, he would have 40, 25 a night.
Well,
it's like if they could raise the rim for him, they would.
Anthony Davis had 21 free throws last night. They're doing fine.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Look, and I'm not going to be the guy who advocates for finally will someone in the NBA respect the Lakers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going to be making that case. I love LeBron. I'm glad. Like, I think in our moment in sports, he's one of the real leaders on a lot of levels. And I think anything that bolsters that narrative is a good thing. And then when it comes to just pure basketball, the fact is maybe no one will ever be better than Jordan. Like, you know, you and I have watched both.
Yeah.
And as objectively as possible. I mean, Jesus, Jordan at his best. It's just, there's nothing you could say. It wasn't even like, it was even... Nothing like it.
I have the most boring take in the end. If I have to pick, I'm taking Jordan. If you take LeBron, I'm not going to argue with you.
Yeah.
That's it.
That sounds like a great time for us to leave.
Well, hold on. We gotta talk quickly about you made me watch a trailer, but I should tell people real quick. Remember, if you need legal advice or help, our lawyer, his name is Jeff Pollack, jeffpollack.com. That's Jeff with a G, jeffpollack.com, 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. He's taking care of our will, but litigation, states, trust, corporate, commercial, whatever sort of law you want, it is a small, really well put together, professional, friendly law firm. So Jeff Pollack. Bob, you wanted me to watch the external, or wait, the internals.
The Eternals.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you're not that excited by it.
I watched it and I'm like, oh, this looks cool off the top of the trippy music and the crazy ship. But at the end of it, I'm like, what the hell did I just watch? I have no idea about nothing except for there's a lot of skinny people, you know, creeping around planet Earth.
So it's going to be the new part of the phase four of Marvel movies, The Eternals. It's a series of characters created by Jack Kirby back in the day. And they're celestial beings that sort of interact with Earth, but sort of not. And they're incredibly powerful. And it's sort of the beginning of their real epic space saga that they're clearly about to carve out. And your reaction is exactly why it's going to fail. Now, there is a chance it might not fail. And it's if it's really good. But they've departed from the usual formula. And I admire them for that. But we'll see. Because there were no villains. You know, it usually everything is bright and fast. And this was slow and gauzy. So we'll see. We'll see. I'm really excited by it. I didn't think it was a great trailer. But you know what I would love to see? The Marvel version of a prestige drama.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
It might be this.
What's that?
And it might be this.
I mean, I'm down for any of that. You know, like, I know it's different and it was an easy watch, but Deadpool completely but they certainly went a completely different angle and they knocked it out of the park. You know, give me the Marvel stuff with a procedural or, you know, just make, as you said, more prestige. I'm here for it. I just watched that trailer. I'm like, what the hell is this? What's going on?
The trailer was really vague, and I wonder to what extent it's because they're unsure what they can and can't reveal. Mm. Like, there's probably all kinds of stuff that are engaged in or a part of the setup for the next saga, but they don't want to. You know, they have more trailers to suck people into the idea of a story. There was no story there. It was really just, here are some characters.
Yeah.
And they're characters we don't know because it was a very minor comic. So really, to your point, there was a what the hell is this? And it's really only the Marvel fans who take this and say, okay, what are the implications of what I've seen? For, you know, us, there's something there. But for everybody else, that was kind of a what the hell was that?
Yeah. And I had no connection to anyone. Hey, listen, I'm here for Angelina Jolie because she's been away for a while. You know, gets another run. That's great. But yeah, I need more information.
All right, Matt, speaking of information, the house is now awake. I got to go see what's up for the day. So I got to run, but we'll catch up again on Friday.
Possibly. It depends. This is now two pod. My Friday, because as you know, Bob, the next day is my birthday. So Friday could be a busy day.
I'll see you on Friday.
Bye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.